and artisanal cheeses have calories, and their presumed virtues and rarity can lead us to eat too much of them. Gourmet triggers are like a fine wine. You should take your time and enjoy them slowly. Recently, I went out for a phenomenal dinner with a large group of friends at a gourmet place. Everyone ordered rich pastas, but I was feeling depleted, and I knew I would eat blindly. I dealt with my gourmet triggers by accepting the tastes offered to me, and partaking carefully and mindfully of the exquisite appetizers. Most trigger foods are rewarding at the level of the brain. I have yet to meet or work with someone who tells me that broccoli is a trigger food. Salad is penance. Spaghetti is pleasure. Trigger foods tend to be yummy and rewarding, and they remind us of happy times. Food addiction. If we are trying to manage our weight, trigger foods can be downright scary. We see them and we don't feel like we can control ourselves around them. Many diet plans try to take the easy way out and say, just cut out all bad foods. There are endless books out there telling you to cut out refined sugar, fat, high fructose corn syrup, bread. If you can do that forever, then I say, more power to you. But realistically, most of us find ourselves in places where there are no other options, and I think that instead of eliminating something outright, we are better off learning to consume it. Remember, this even goes back to your stakeholders. You may not be able to cut all of them out of your life entirely, so instead, you need to find a new way to consume them. When we are told to completely stop eating a food, and then for many reasons we encounter that food, we do not have the skills to resist it. This is not the same as drugs and alcohol. Here is where food enters a tricky space. When we are dealing with other addictions like alcohol, tobacco, and drugs, at the end of the day, no one needs those things to survive. We can quit them cold turkey and live a drug or alcohol-free life. On the other hand, we have to eat, and we're faced with dozens of food choices each day. Just being told to say no is not preparing us for difficult times. One tricky bit with the trigger foods is something called the abstinence violation effect, first postulated by alcohol researcher Alan Marlett. It's a fancy way of saying falling off the wagon. Basically, once a person slips and eats the forbidden food, he or she will say, to hell with it. I screwed up my diet, so I might as well eat the whole thing. A similar pattern is seen in recently abstinent alcoholics. Having 2 forkfuls of cheesecake, especially if you know how to eat cheesecake, is not your demise. In fact, it may be your salvation. By having just a couple of forkfuls, you learn a lesson. You can tolerate a trigger food without feeling out of control. But finding this middle ground means breaking rules. You have to defy the legion of stakeholders who feel you are wasting food when you don't finish the entire portion, or defying golden rules about clean plates, or facing fears of not having enough food later, or fears of letting people down because you didn't clean your plate after they cooked for hours. Life is short. Do you really want to spend the rest of your life never partaking of foods that give you pleasure again? I don't think so. It's about learning to consume them properly, and about finding pleasure in the many other places in life where it also exists. In this book, there are no forbidden foods. I don't care what you eat, and at no point am I going to put out a prescriptive guide to eating. There are many books that already do that, and the fact is, you know the answers already. All of us know how to eat, but knowing and doing are two different things. Most theories of health behavior will tell you that knowledge doesn't predict behavior. things like attitudes do. So, change your attitude about these trigger foods, and then you'll be able to change your behavior. Managing trigger foods. Start simple. Don't order trigger foods, because they will come to you. When you are on your own and making the decisions, simply don't order them. Use your alone times to make optimal decisions. Usually, celebrations and other people will bring trigger foods into our lives. You will expend enough effort to manage them there, so don't bring them in voluntarily. This also means that you shouldn't bring them into your kitchen. If the cookies aren't in the kitchen, you won't go and grab them. If they need to be in your kitchen, then put them in a cabinet with a child lock. The extra minute it takes you to fool with the lock should be a moment when you say to yourself, "Really?" If you do order them yourself, throw out half right away. Especially with a trigger food, don't be shy about throwing them away. For example, sometimes at a birthday party or wedding, the cake is cut and brought to you. It's okay to eat just half or a few forkfuls and then leave the rest. Don't worry, nobody will notice, and if they do, so what? Answer only to yourself. When they come to you, partake sparingly. If you can break off half the cookie or cut the pie or burger to a manageable size, do so right out of the gate. If you are eating with someone else, share the other half. If it's sitting in front of you, the temptation is hard to fight. Don't take home the leftovers. Ever. This is a tough one because it feels wasteful. Restaurants give you too much food, and with trigger foods, if they're at home, you'll follow them into the fridge late at night for another hookup. Just because the calories are eaten at two different times doesn't mean they don't add up. Eat trigger foods slowly. Make love to that cheesecake. Put a small forkful in your mouth. Roll it on your tongue. Really enjoy it. We tend to eat trigger foods too quickly and blindly, ignoring our spider senses and letting the decision-making go out the window because it is so rewarding. So, slow down, and much like sex, prolong the pleasure. A 100-calorie portion can be just as rewarding as a 1,000-calorie brick of cake if you eat it slowly. Then, when you are done, you can not only revel in the pleasure of the cheesecake, but also the satisfaction of having listened to and regulated yourself. Try the paradoxical prescription. Do you have a trigger food that you both crave and fear? Force yourself to eat a 100-calorie portion of it every day. When I have patients with triggers, they feel as though they will panic if they can't have it, or that they'll go out of control when they do. So we build it into their daily lives. Over time, it loses much of its power. Fix the context. If bread is your trigger and your dining companions are amenable, then ask the waiter not to bring any bread. Our danger is in grabbing at trigger foods blindly. If they aren't there to grab, then you'll be okay. That also means keeping them out of your house, car, desk, and purse. If you don't learn to coexist with the cookie jar will own you. Instead, invite it in on your own terms. Use your brain. People love being told what to do because it's easier and requires less responsibility, less listening to ourselves, and less struggle. Diet books that tell you exactly what to eat, at what time, and in what quantities are successful because they allow you to shut off your mind and not take full ownership of what you are doing. Take, for example, the ones that allow for all the cheese and oil and fat you want, as long as you don't eat a single grain or starch. This is simply not sustainable for most people. By blindly following, you're not listening to your body, and in essence, you're outsourcing your spider senses. It also makes it hard to eat with other people. But here's the part people love. When it doesn't work, it can be written off to the plan, which is easier and less scary than taking responsibility for your own weight gain. Surviving tricky situations. Just know, I never said this would be easy. But there are some tricks you can employ to get you through the most difficult situations, because life simply happens, and you will encounter them no matter how much you work to survive. And for yourself, when you come across a situation that trips you up, make a note, mental or actual. Figure out a way to blast through it without derailing all that you've worked to achieve. The buffet. Buffets are the death knell for people trying to manage weight, and yet they are perceived as having such value in our bargain-obsessed society. If we are at a buffet, we feel like we have to get our money's worth, and therefore we overeat. In general, buffets are priced so they seem like a better bargain in terms of dollars per pound of food than a la carte, and from a strict dollars and cents perspective, they are. But that's where the bargain begins and ends. The way many buffet days go down for people are as follows. Some folks feel like they deserve the buffet as a reward after a hard week of work, and so they just eat with abandon. It is easy to consume 3,000 to 4,000 calories at a buffet in a single sitting. Some people try to be strategic buffet eaters. Ooh, we are going to that fabulous buffet brunch, all-you-can-eat restaurant, salad buffet restaurant, later today, so I better be good today. I may even go to the gym. And then I'm only going to eat good stuff and restrict what I eat so I can eat anything I want later. Remember what Baumeister and many other researchers say about willpower. We often don't have enough willpower to go around, and the many choices at a buffet can leave us unable to make good choices. So, we don't make any. We just eat what we want. If you go to a buffet having restricted yourself all day and having used up all of your willpower, you will likely binge. Buffets are like a war zone for your spider senses. We typically go in wanting to get our money's worth, being terrible gatekeepers, and putting too much on our plates, feeling compelled to finish them, and joining in with our stakeholders. This is a dietary disaster waiting to happen. I faced down a buffet the other day when a hotel made an error in my bill. To make amends, they offered me lunch. I was alone, and the only place to eat was a brunch buffet. It was not for the faint of heart. I literally felt anxious as I stared down the table filled with breakfast meats, muffins, cakes, pies, and a crepe station. It was the first buffet I had encountered in about 12 months. I was reminded that all-you-can-eat setups are never a good idea. I took a deep breath, tasted some tricky favorites, indulged in the fresh fruits and vegetables, and felt no compunction about leaving a little behind. Parties and family gatherings. These kind of events are killers. Not only are they filled with trigger foods, but they can also be viewed as trigger events. We have to attend, and thus survive them. And if we learn to listen to our spider senses, we may even thrive in them. Beating the challenge of trigger events often seems impossible. Some families or communities are just focused on having lots of good food all the time, and certain jobs can require attendance at frequent food-heavy events. On such days, you don't want to over-deprive on the front end, so you wind up making bad decisions later. Eat breakfast on those days, so you are able to engage in your mindfulness minute and good gatekeeping. These events, particularly family gatherings, can bring up strong and sometimes unpleasant emotions, which we try to avoid by eating. And if ever there were a situation in which to say this, watch out for those stakeholders. In some families, not eating the pie is no different than slapping your aunt or grandmother across the face. Tricks from someone who knows. Take the pie and eat it slowly, enjoying only a few bites. When grandma is distracted, ditch the rest without hurting her feelings. Stay away from the food if it's set out on a table for self-serve. If it is sit-down, when the meal is done and appropriate to do so, get out of there and go to another area and continue conversations there. If you have a choice of taking your food and moving away from the serving plates, do it. Avoid the snatch-and-grab reflexive food grabs that can translate into hundreds of under-the-radar calories. If you indulge 10 times in the trays of tiny 100-calorie bites being walked around, you've racked up some calories, and that will undo you. Eat for you. I was recently in a restaurant in New York. I was cold and craving the crepes they had in the window, even though I knew full well that an entire crepe contained too much sugar, fat, and calories. I just wanted about 1/3 of one, but they would not make that for me. So I ordered the whole thing, ate the 3 or 4 forkfuls I wanted, was completely satisfied, and then I was done. The waitress looked ashen when she came to check on me, and I asked her to take it away. She said, "Wasn't it good?" I am a pleaser, and I felt sad for her. In fact, the crepe was delicious, but I didn't want to eat the entire thing. I could easily have seen where her reaction and my drive to please would have led me to eat more, to show her that I liked it. Instead, I relied on my words to communicate for me. I told her it was fantastic, and that I'd had exactly as much as I wanted. She wasn't convinced, but it wasn't my job to convince her. I got exactly what I wanted. I didn't order or eat the crepe to please her. I got it for me. I've had this same experience during dinner at people's homes and eating out in a number of venues. If you don't finish, you feel like you're letting someone down, or that somehow your eating is coming under scrutiny. The fear of letting someone down is one of our most primitive fears. Stand your ground, especially where trigger foods are concerned. Distract with desire, not deprivation. Keep in mind that the more you spend down your willpower, the less of it you will have. So don't always face down food desires with deprivation. Instead, substitute them with something else you desire. I have a friend who is a writer, so she works from home. I told her to satisfy other desires in order to avoid the munchies. She was craving a midday snack, but had already eaten her snack for the afternoon. She was struggling because she knew she wanted to scratch her itch, and she'd been working so hard at losing weight. She decided to take a break and indulge in her other obsession, watching TV. She had some shows recorded that she was saving for the weekend, but knowing she was fidgety for food, she went to the TV and indulged in some workday viewing. She didn't eat again until dinner time, and felt like she'd had a luxurious treat anyway. We can't always do what we want to do. That's life. Because we can't always do what we want to do, and food is available to just about all of us as a quick reward, we often use it. If we are idle eaters that start grabbing the goodies because we feel deprived, depleted, or otherwise despondent, we tend to have a trigger that we abuse. We need to learn to rely on other things that are pleasurable and easier to regulate. Calorie-free pleasure. Make a list of escapist pleasures and go to them instead. Take a bath. Take a walk. Read a book. Fiddle around on Facebook. have sex, or even masturbate, depending on whether you're at home, or work, or in traffic when the munchies hit. It's pleasurable, distracting, and often after an orgasm, you may not feel as hungry. Structure your environment. We need to create a balance between temptation and temperance, and these tips are focused on ways to create that balance. Clean out the minefield. Remove or minimize the triggers in your home, the candy or chips. Walk to the store and buy a single serving bag and enjoy it, instead of buying the family size bag and eating the entire thing. Lock the cupboards if you need to. I actually put child locks on my cabinets and a little post-it by the lock, asking, "Is it worth it?" Sometimes the momentary delay to fudge with the child lock gave me pause to stop and ask myself if I was eating because I was frustrated, lonely, anxious, or bored, my usual reasons for eating. And then I redirected those emotions. Putting trigger snacks in the freezer works sometimes too. We tend not to go to the freezer as often, so we can experience the out-of-sight, out-of-mind element. But some people may actually enjoy frozen snack foods better, so make sure it doesn't make them more appealing. Keep food in food spaces. I have had patients who had refrigerators in their bedrooms, cookies in their nightstands, and candy in their cars. When you can't do the quick grab, you are less likely to get into trouble. If you are going to keep a few things with you to take the edge off when you are really hungry, keep the healthy options close by. One tool that helped me immeasurably with my weight loss was to bring my own lunches to work. I can control the portions better. And to bring a variety of fresh fruits and vegetables in on Monday, as well as some multi-grain bars and other options for times I needed a grab-and-go snack between classes. I was fortunate because the nearest place to purchase food was a 5 to 7 minute walk away, and by ensuring that the easy reach was healthy, I made fewer food mistakes. It's like grocery shopping when you're hungry. If you head to a place to buy lunch when you're starving, you might choose incorrectly. But if, when your stomach growls, your healthy lunch is already on your desk, you're in better shape. If there is a snack food you like, portion it out ahead of time and put it in little bags. If you try to do that for yourself from a larger bag, trust me, you will overestimate. The grocery store. Grocery stores are minefields, and the people who put the food in the store use marketing science to draw you in and get you to buy, and not necessarily the good stuff. Use all the strategies that you can, like not shopping when you're hungry or depleted, because your willpower won't be as strong in the face of those giant packages of cookies. And just like you can use a smaller plate to cut down on eating, you can also use a smaller cart to cut down on loading it up. When possible, consider using a hand-carried basket instead of a cart. I realize that this is not always possible if you are shopping for a big family or stocking up. But try it and see how you choose when you can't make impulse buys. Sometimes the smaller basket makes you more mindful and forces you to take that extra moment to stop and think instead of blindly throwing the items in your cart. Remember, if it doesn't come into the house, you are less likely to eat it. I sometimes try a fun technique at one of my favorite local grocery stores. I don't use a cart or a basket, only purchase what I can carry in my hands, and invariably, I actually make better choices and am able to tell myself no. In the shopping chapter, I will also talk about avoiding the big box stores, where the big bargains can lead to even bigger weight gain. Here are some other tips to help you more gracefully handle the triggers in the grocery store. Make a list and stick to it. If you live in a major metropolitan area, there are grocery delivery services that allow you to order groceries online and then get them delivered. You may be less likely to make impulse purchases if you don't smell and see the food. Don't get drawn in by the stock-up deals or bulk items. Then the stuff is in the house, and you eat it. Read labels. Calories and sugar lurk in odd places. Yogurt can seem like a healthy option, but some brands contain a lot of sugar, and fat-free foods can be calorie-laden. Remember how prior generations shopped, and how many parts of the world still do. If you have the luxury to do so, try to shop more regularly for fresher ingredients and steer away from the processed stuff. Our parents often went to the butcher, baker, and market daily to prepare dinner. I realize that modern schedules can make this tough, though, and I am very guilty of relying on the pre-prepared stuff more than I should. But I do know that whenever I walk into a grocery, that night, my girls and I tend to eat more freshly prepared stuff than when I do not. Strategies for eating out. Restaurants are where healthy eating often goes to die. We can't control the ingredients, portion sizes, side dishes, stakeholders, and so on. But it is also a big part of our culture. And frankly, it's fun. Eating out is all about planning and mindfulness. Restaurants don't have to be danger zones, but rather places where you need to let your spider senses in, be fearless about walking away, and not get caught up in pleasing others. Course by course. One of my favorite sushi places in Los Angeles is called Sugarfish. It is the single diner's fantasy restaurant. Many times eating out alone is a nuisance because you may not give in to the multiple steps or calories of ordering appetizer and entree, and as such may also be limited in terms of variety. When you order one thing, you eat it, and before you know it, you've finished. Sugarfish has a series of price-fixed menus, some as low as about 400 calories, and they pace the meal nicely. Even with so few calories, it comes out in four courses, each presented beautifully. The amount of food isn't that much, but the pacing and the quality of the food leaves you feeling taken care of and full. Eat in phases. We tend to put everything in front of us at once and then eat it all at once. For anyone who has ever celebrated Christmas or a birthday or other gifty holiday, you know how it feels. You have a big pile of gifts in front of you, and after opening them all, you often feel numb and dejected. Do you remember how good it felt when a few more gifts were pulled out later? Or if you open the gifts over a longer period of time? Meals are similar. If you can serve or eat the meal in phases, eat one thing, such as a salad, and let it breathe, and then eat something else, even if the portions are very small, it's a celebratory way to eat and prolongs the eating experience. Harness hotness. It's interesting that in English, when we ask if food is hot, it can mean temperature or spice. Telugu, the language I grew up with, actually has two food temperature words, one that means spicy heat and another that means temperature heat. That being said, if I only learned one thing growing up with hot, spicy food, it's that it slows us down when we're eating it. I was raised on Indian food that was hot in terms of both temperature and spice, and this often slows me down significantly, which typically results in my being aware that I am full and being able to eat less and still feel satisfied. The why. Invite your trigger foods in, and by using tools such as the mindfulness minute, monitoring, portion control, restructuring your environment, and being good to yourself with things other than food, you can exist in a toxic food world and honor yourself. The fact is, trigger foods are everywhere, and they are powerful. It is not realistic to think that you can construct a world where they do not exist. It's also not realistic to take on a diet plan that eliminates bad foods. There are no bad foods, just bad decisions. The now. Here's an exercise that I really want you to consider carefully. For your next meal or snack, put a plate of something really tempting in front of you. Then, take a mindfulness minute and prepare yourself to be with the food. Now, eat only half of it. Throw the rest of it in the garbage. Write down how you felt. Was it a challenge? Was it easy? After you were done with your half of the plate, were you still hungry? You can practice this a few ways over time. In my experience, people are extremely resistant to this exercise. The Clean Plate Club is a heavy childhood lesson, and people feel there is some sort of horror in waste. Since you cannot control how the world serves food, you want to use good gatekeeping as often as possible so you can learn to take the proper amount, eat it mindfully, and feel satisfied. These exercises let you exert some dirty plate muscle. At home, use cookies. Put 4 on the plate. Eat 2 and toss 2. Order in. Scoop the appropriate portion size onto the plate and throw the rest in the garbage. At the restaurant, before you even cut into the food, ask for a second plate. Divide the portion in half and hand the waiter the other half. Chapter 11. Quit the Clean Plate Club. Part of the secret of success in life is to eat what you like and let the food fight it out inside. Mark Twain. Here is the current state of knowledge and advice on weight loss in the world today. Eat less. Exercise more. Eat healthier. Don't eat junk food. Ask anyone on the street what a healthy meal looks like and how to lose weight, and they will give you a perfect answer. But knowledge is not behavior. And despite knowing all of this, we live in a country where 1/3 of adults are obese. Simple solutions to a complex problem. Let's take those 4 points one by one, since they form the foundation of what is supposed to be a successful weight management routine. They are not the whole shooting match. They're just the basic principles. But take all that you've learned in this book and combine it with these 4 points, and you will defeat your food issues. Eat less. Your spider senses are essential in the ongoing battle with weight loss. This is about brain, environment, motivation, willpower, our personal histories, our stakeholders, and our lifestyles. This is about monitoring and mindfulness. On one weight loss show on which I worked, a client looked at his 400-calorie lunch, which had been carefully portioned and served in a tiny little takeout container. A wonderful melange of chicken, rice, and vegetables, it appeared small in terms of volume. He said he literally felt panicky at the beginning of the meal, that he wouldn't have enough to eat. But by eating slowly and enjoying each bite, he found he was satisfied at the end of the meal. We tend to eat so quickly that small meals can feel scary, and if we look at the meal right out of the gate and think it won't be enough, our brains can make us feel like it isn't. Instead, enjoy each bite. It's not simply a matter of eating less. It's also about listening to our spider senses and being mindful of when we are full, so that we don't consume huge portions. Portion sizes. The National Institutes of Health reveals that portion sizes have increased anywhere from 30 to 100%, depending on the food, in the past 20 years. And since we love to clean our plates, you do the math. So even when there is triple the amount of food on the plate that you'd normally eat, you feel compelled to finish it. Let your mind play tricks. Remember, I don't care what you eat. This is about a lifelong new approach to food, one that involves using food for nutrition and listening to your body and mind in all areas of your life. But there are a few tricks you can practice to make eating less a little easier. First, it's time for you to get new plates. In my home, we no longer use dinner plates. We use bread plates for dinner. And what are often being sold as dinner plates could actually suffice quite nicely as serving platters. If you are staring at a huge plate that looks empty, you will automatically feel deprived before you ever start eating. Over the past few years, they've been making plates larger than they used to, keeping up with those ever-growing portion sizes. I have found smaller plates at a variety of vendors, and you can choose fun shapes and colors. Restaurant owners tend to use enormous plates, enormous glasses, and enormous utensils. But at home, if you make them smaller, you will eat less and slow down. Interestingly, in parts of the world where obesity and being overweight are not nearly as endemic, for example, Western Europe, coffee cups, plates, and bowls are significantly smaller. Second, if you want to eat less, eat more slowly. Our brain needs a minute to catch up. If you just shove in a bunch of food, it needs a second to say, "Oh, I'm full." We know that we are terrible at heeding our signals that we are full. So, by eating slowly, you will eat less. Here is where we return to monitoring, attention, and not eating while distracted. Often, when we do something else, we eat faster. Make eating about eating. Remember what we talked about in the previous chapter, spreading out the courses to make eating more special? There's a little mental trick with that strategy as well. Many people feel like smaller portion sizes equal less time eating. Eating is in fact pleasurable, so it's not just about consuming food, but also about consuming time. By breaking the meal into smaller plates and phases, you prolong it and give your brain and gut and spider senses a chance to kick in and stop you from overeating. This also may reinforce eating more slowly. Mindless eating. A recent study conducted by Brian Wansink and his colleagues points out how mindlessly we can eat. Two groups were given different situations. One group had a normal bowl of soup that would empty out as they ate it. The other group had specially designed bowls that had a pump system built into the bottom that could add more soup to the bowl as the person ate. They were not aware of this. Everyone was told to stop eating when they were full. The people who had the bowls that kept refilling ate 73% more before reporting they were full than those who had the regular bowls of soup, supporting the assertion that we often use visual cues to figure out if we are full, clean plates, rather than our true feeling of fullness. As such, trying to fill our plates with the right amount of food, eating slowly, and then giving our minds a chance to catch up with our stomachs is key. Exercise more. Fitness experts and aficionados will freak out over this next section, but nutritionists will wholeheartedly agree. I want to be clear. To get your weight under control, you need to control your eating and generally your psychological approach to food intake. People who have a weight issue and assume they can exercise it off are misled and will waste a lot of time thinking they can eat whatever they want as long as they hit the gym. It's completely false. From a strictly mathematical and efficiency perspective, exercise as a weight loss tool doesn't really make sense. While you can spend an hour on a treadmill huffing and puffing and maybe knock out 600 to 800 calories, you can probably turn around and consume that many calories in about 5 to 8 minutes with a tuna sandwich and some coleslaw. So, while exercise may aid in weight loss, it will only work if you also change your eating patterns. You can't allow an intense workout to justify eating whatever you want. When people exercise, it begets hunger. And many people assume that the exercise is a get-out-of-jail-free card. I worked out, so I can eat anything I want. But the truth is, you can't. There are 3,500 calories in a pound. If you burn that many, you lose a pound. If you burn 600 calories in a workout and then eat a 1,200-calorie lunch that you would not have eaten had you not worked out, then you are wasting your time and fighting a losing battle. The other problem is that often people go to the gym and phone it in. If you can read or talk while you exercise, you are probably not burning nearly as many calories as you think. That said, exercise is essential. Not for weight loss, but for vitality and health. This isn't a book about losing weight. This is a book about living a full, authentic, and healthy life. Exercise enhances your spider senses because it puts you in better touch with your body. I am a firm believer in health and beauty at any weight. Recent studies show that if you lose weight, the key to keeping it off is exercise. Even more important, exercise boosts cardiovascular and immune function, bone and joint health, muscle tone, and cognitive function. It helps you to manage stress and a host of chronic illnesses like diabetes, and may have protective benefits for mental health issues, including depression and anxiety. The list is endless. Again, listen to yourself and not your stakeholders. Don't feel like you have to run 5 miles every day just because that's what your best friend did to lose weight. You will only wind up frustrated and demoralized. Instead, find something you really enjoy, whether it's playing a game of tennis or attending a yoga class. If you hate the gym, don't force yourself to go. Find something more in line with your spider senses, such as taking a walk outside. Exercise can help tweak your metabolism, and it may be as close to a cure-all as anything else that we have in our health toolbox. And yes, it can help you manage your weight. My point is that exercise alone is not the key. In fact, it ranks low compared to how you approach food and learn to pay attention to yourself whenever you eat. At the end of the day, if you want to lose or manage weight, eat less. Eat healthier. I am not a dietitian or nutritionist, and this book is not about what to eat. It's about why you eat. The choices you make in terms of healthfulness are related to the themes of this book. Feed yourself as if you were your own child. When you make unhealthy choices, think about whether that is how you would feed someone you really care about. You are a finely tuned machine, so treat yourself as such. If you had a really expensive car that needed expensive gas, you would probably take the time and money to fill it properly so that it would run better. So, why would you treat yourself any differently? Faking it. Sugar substitutes. Folks like Linda Bartoshuk, a psychologist and professor at the University of Florida, who studies taste and obesity, and Susan Swithers and Terry Davidson, psychologists at Purdue, have talked about the link between taste and weight. Swithers and Davidson have conducted animal studies on artificial sweeteners, and guess what? That saccharin trickery may not be working. They postulate that when we drink diet sodas, our brain gets the signal of sweet, but our bodies don't get the glucose. They believe that the brain uses taste as an index of the calories to come, which we then need to burn. When the actual calories don't follow the taste, what may happen is eating more or burning less energy. In their studies, the rats that ate saccharin-sweetened food gained more weight. When our brains get the sweet signal, it maintains our sugar cravings and throws off our brain and body's ability to manage our energy demands. Artificial sweeteners are like methadone is to heroin, meant to get us off of sugar without the caloric effects. But the original problem of craving sweet remains, and we continue to struggle with the craving. Watch your patterns with artificial sweeteners and see if you kick it up at certain times, because it may be setting you up for even bigger sugar transgressions at other times in the day and for weight gain down the road. Choose healthy foods. Healthier foods, such as fruits, vegetables, lean proteins, and multigrain products, tend to stay with us longer, so we don't fall prey to the hunger bug. Make healthy food a habit. If that's all you have around and you're hungry, you will reach for it. Make your plate colorful. Half your plate should be vegetables and fruits. This is about respect and honoring your body. It is short-sighted to consistently choose the unhealthy option. Each time you choose the less-than-healthy option, wait a beat and think about what you are about to put into your body. Choose well. When you eat well-prepared food made with high-quality ingredients, a little goes a long way. The more you learn to listen to and honor yourself, the more it will extend to how you feed yourself. Liquid lunch. Watch the liquids. I recently worked with a patient who assumed that when you drink calories, they don't count as much. A calorie is a calorie, whether it comes from a carrot or candy. Drinking rich coffee drinks, sports drinks, and sodas can push 500 to 800 calories into your day without you even thinking about it. Those frappy drinks at your coffee shop can pack a 400 to 600 calorie wallop. We often drink more mindlessly than we eat, so we ingest those calories without even thinking about it. Also, be careful of going to those juice stores. You may think you're drinking a cup of fruit, but a large one of those can put you back 400 calories or more. And again, we often consume them more mindlessly, and they often do not leave us feeling as satisfied, so we are hungry more quickly. Don't eat junk food. Junk food and fast food are the demise of most of us. Fast, cheap, accessible, tasty, and rewarding. As with all things, moderation is the order of the day, and sometimes junk food is thrust upon us on a road trip, in an airport, or at a kid's party. If you do eat junk, at least listen to your spider senses and walk away when you are full. The world makes it hard to eat well, but you can do it by remaining mindful and heeding your spider senses. Pizza is not inherently bad. It's all about portion size. You know that eating an entire pizza is unhealthy, so don't do it. One slice? Bon appetit! Every meal is an opportunity to make new and healthier choices. And if you didn't quite hit the healthy target at your last meal, don't fret. Your next meal is a chance to get it right. How to avoid clean plate mistakes in a dirty food porn world. So many of my clients believe deprivation means they are doing weight loss right. They can usually pull it off for a few weeks, maybe even a few months. They sometimes say that the feeling of hunger makes them feel virtuous. Some even build in cheat days. I hate that term, as though you were doing something immoral with a bowl of pasta. The so-called cheat days are viewed as the exception, and they are often a dysregulated mess. A day when the person is finally back with the food they want, and after a week of steamed vegetables and skinless chicken, they embrace that pasta like a lover's kiss after a long absence. I firmly believe in inviting the demons to the table at every meal. Demons get their power by sitting in the darkness where they can taunt us. When you invite them out, they lose a lot of that power. Instead of cheat days, bring the foods you like into every meal and learn to be with them in a reasonable way. One slice of pizza with that salad, half the sandwich and the vegetable soup, the great Chinese food dish, skipping the rice, half the brownie with your tea. Listening to your spider senses and feeding yourself should not be illicit or forbidden, and it doesn't mean you're a failure. Let the scary foods in. So, once you decide to invite those scary foods in, I want you to go to a restaurant and order that slice of cheesecake or bowl of bisque. The problem is that the restaurants are often not on the same page or plate as you. Their patrons expect big servings, and they may lose customers with small portion sizes. Large portion sizes don't cost them that much more, but they keep customers coming back. Go to a restaurant, but try to eat an appropriate portion. In a world of large portion sizes, you need your spider senses to inform good gatekeeping. So, you order that forbidden food, but are now given an inappropriately large serving size. Ignore the childhood teaching to clean your plate. This book is all about the Dirty Plate Club, not the Clean Plate Club we learned about when we were four. What do we do in the Dirty Plate Club? We walk away when we are done. We ignore our stakeholders. We shelve the fears. We give up the childhood myths. We listen to ourselves. So when you are eating outside of your house, try these tips to get you there. Ask your server if he will bring you a smaller portion. Ideally, the restaurant will charge you less, but they may not. If he will cut the portion, then great. And stop fretting about how you didn't get your money's worth. If half of that 8-ounce cup of bisque filled you up and gave you pleasure, then you just got your money's worth. If your server can't bring you a smaller portion, then ask for a smaller plate or bowl. Create your portion size right there and make her take away the rest immediately. That unfinished portion will keep staring at you with a come-hither look, and if you are feeling depleted or want a reward, you may just start blindly eating. Take away the trigger. Keep the context clean. Try to avoid classic mistakes, like having the serving plates at the table, because it is too easy to go for seconds. Keeping the plates at the table can scramble your spider senses, because you may not take that mindfulness minute to ask yourself if you are actually still hungry. Cut it down to size. Order the smaller size, even if it doesn't seem as economical. Stop buying for an army. Avoid shopping at big box stores and bringing home all those large quantities that you will then feel compelled to consume. Say goodbye to the buffet. Even if the buffet breakfast seems like a better deal, order a la carte. You will eat less. Share the food. If you are dining with friends or a companion, each of you can order one thing and then split it. It gives you a greater variety of flavors, and you may eat less as a result. Watch the wine. Alcohol has calories, but more important, alcohol also lowers our filters and can impair decision-making. We are less able to pay attention, monitor, and allow our spider senses to work if we are numbed by alcohol. Take it nice and slow and try to eat before you drink too much. The medical fine print. Dietary and activity changes of any kind should be undertaken after getting clearance from your healthcare professional. You should consider the following tips if you are going to embark on a program of changes in what you eat and how you exercise. See your physician to review any issues related to medications, lab results, or existing health conditions before changing your diet, using supplements of any kind, or starting an exercise program. Consider seeking out therapy with a licensed mental health professional if through this process you find that longer-term psychological issues may be significantly impacting how you eat and live. If you are feeling out of control with food, either controlling what you eat too much, losing significant amounts of weight, or engaging in behaviors to get rid of food, purging, using laxatives, excessive exercise, see a healthcare professional as soon as possible. The why. When you reflect on how to eat, you need to start with why you eat. And when you are faced with those whys, be able to stop, look, listen, and then act. Eating less, exercising more, eating healthier, and not eating junk food will only get you so far. You also need to trust your spider senses and be mindful of how you are treating your body. The now. This is more like homework than an exercise. I want you to change your eating by fixing your environment. We have already reviewed much of this, but practice makes perfect, and these small fixes can lead to big changes. Start with investing in some small plates. I buy rice bowls in Chinatown and use them for cereal. That way I'm not tempted to overpour into a typical bowl. Observe the difference once you switch them out. Are you satisfied? Are you noticing a change in how much you consume? Start reading labels to learn portion sizes and then use measuring cups to measure at home. That way, you can't lie to yourself about what's on the plate. A half a cup of rice is okay. 2 cups is not, even if it is brown. Use the resources listed in the back of the book to get a handle on portion sizes. Purge your home. Clean out your cabinets and desk at work, and toss out the foods that are dangerous for you. Let the junk find you, but don't invite it in. I have a patient who likes nuts, and I'm fine with her eating them. But instead of buying a 10-pound bag and parking it in her kitchen to taunt her, she treats herself once a week to a 1-serving bagful when she attends a weekly writing class. Order small. Get into the habit of ordering the smallest size offered. If fear was a part of your childhood dinner table, think of ways you can reconfigure this. Many times a kitchen table can be an anxious place because of your early lessons. You can reconfigure the table and change or rotate who sits at the head of your table, encouraging conversation. Avoid putting the serving platters on the table so fear doesn't lead you to eat blindly. Check in. Clean, dirty plate. When you're eating with other people, watch them. Some are indifferent to food, while others shovel it in so quickly it actually hurts your chest. Sometimes it will make you more mindful about how you eat and more aware of things you might do that you didn't even realize until you saw the habit in someone else. Part 3. Eating patterns equal life patterns. Chapter 12. Food as metaphor. One cannot think well, love well, and sleep well if one has not dined well. Virginia Woolf. Miss Woolf nailed it. We must take care of ourselves and nourish ourselves if we are going to be able to regulate ourselves in other parts of our lives. Food is our first lesson in self-regulation, and all of our other self-regulation lessons stem from our relationship with food and our ability to adjust it. This chapter introduces the next section in the book, showing how food can serve as a metaphor, and why your relationship with food impacts love, life, work, and so many other things. When I lost the weight, I did not